Happy Sabbath. Hope it is has been a good Sabbath for you so far. Hopefully a restful Sabbath in the proper way. You know, it's easy to get to a Sabbath and feel a little bit tired, a little bit worn down. We come to a Sabbath after a long week, and we are beat. We are worn out. And that's just how it is sometimes. We have long, demanding weeks. We may have 6 very full days of labor and activity, and we may reach the Sabbath worn out physically. Sometimes we reach the Sabbath worn out spiritually. Turn over to Daniel 7 and verse 25, if you will. See, that being worn down is something that is common. It's something that Satan tries to do. It's something that is a part of how he's operating and part of what he wants to do, especially to us, and especially in these last times. Daniel 7 and verse 25 is talking about a power that is backed by Satan, that is really just fueled by Satan. And it says, He shall speak pompous words against the Most High, shall persecute the saints of the Most High, and shall intend to change times and law. Then the saints shall be given into his hand for a time and times and half a time. Where it says there, that he shall persecute the saints of the Most High. It's translated in some of your Bibles, perhaps, as wear down. Wear down the saints of the Most High. It's something that Satan is actively doing. And especially in these times, especially with the society that we live in and all the distractions and all the appeal and everything that can consume our attention and our focus, and then with the things that can just stress us and burden us, we can have this tendency to be worn down. It's interesting because this word here, persecuted or wear down, is described this way in Strong's Concordance. It says it corresponds to a word that usually means to wax old. In the Old King James, often used of garments wearing out. It's similar to a word that means to wear out physically, but this word is used only in a mental sense. So it's saying it's only in a mental sense that this persecution, this specific type of persecution is going on. It's a wearing down. It's not a physical wearing down necessarily. It's a mental, emotional, spiritual wearing down. And that's something that Satan actively does. He's working to wear us out. And very often, it works. And he's done this all along. We can go back and we can see example after example in the Old Testament. We're going to take a look at one. Let's turn over to Exodus 32. Now, some background before we get there. The Israelites had just gone through the Red Sea and had celebrated the days that we still remember with the holy days that we've just been through. And now they're in the wilderness, and now they're wandering, and they've been wandering for a time, perhaps about 7 weeks. And then they come to Sinai, and they're given the law. And God talks to them from the top of a mountain. And they see the mountain, and they see the smoke and the fire, and they're in awe of it. And it's amazing. They've gone through this whole chain of miracles up to this point where they actually encounter God face to face in a sense. And God speaks to them out of the cloud and he gives them the Ten Commandments. And Moses goes up into the mountain and Moses returns to them. He comes back to the people and he's there with them. And then God commands him to go up into the mountain again. And now Moses is up there for 40 days perhaps. He's up there for a while. He's been up there for maybe almost 6 weeks. And the people don't know what's going on. And you know, they're just getting a little tired of waiting. And it's kind of stressful. They see this cloud. They know Moses disappeared up there. What's happened to him? Is he dead? Is he coming back to us? Are we supposed to do something here? What's our next step? This could be a stressful situation for them. They're now out in the middle of the wilderness, and their leader that has led them out is no longer there with them, and they don't know what's happened to them. So they're trying to figure out what's going on. They're getting tired of waiting. They're wearing down, in a sense. They have that emotional, mental, spiritual stress, perhaps even, on them, and they're starting to get a little antsy, and they want to get out of that. So what do? Exodus 32, and verse 1, says, "Now when the people saw that Moses delayed coming down from the mountain, the people gathered together to Aaron," or against Aaron in some translations, "and said to him, 'Come, make us gods that shall go before us. For as for this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him.'" They were worn down. And so they start to try and fix things themselves. They try to do what's comfortable for them. They try to, you know, ease this anxiety that they have, because it's heavy on them and it's heavy on their shoulders. And what did they do? They committed a great sin, as Moses calls it later in verse 30. He says, "You've committed a great sin." When he comes down and he sees that they've made this golden calf, that Aaron has made this golden calf for them, and that they're here worshiping it. Let's go down a little bit. Exodus 32 and verse 25. "Now when Moses saw that the people were unrestrained, for Aaron had not restrained them to their shame among their enemies, Moses stood in the entrance of the camp." And again, dropping down in verse 30. "Came to pass on the next day that Moses said to the people, 'You have committed a great sin. So now I will make you go up to the Lord. Perhaps I can make atonement for your sin.'" So again, they revert into just horrible sin that they had been commanded explicitly not to do. In verse 25, it says, "Moses saw that the people were unrestrained." In some translations, it says the people were naked. The people were uncovered. And it's an interesting word there. The word there literally means loosen. It literally means they were loosened from something. They were relaxed. It's speculated that perhaps physically they were. There was a lot of sexuality and pagan practices, and that was a big part of perhaps what was going on. But the implication, the bigger implication here, is that they were loosened from a spiritual state, from a state of being devoted to God. They had become unrestrained. So they get to this place, they're worn down. They know the laws that they've heard that this God has given them, and they know what this Moses has told them and what they think they're supposed to do, but they're just at a point where it's just too much. And so they're overwhelmed by it. They got a little lazy. They didn't take the proper care that they should. And they let go. They just cast off restraint. That's something we can do too. I'm sure you have probably hit a time in your life where you've just lacked the motivation to keep going forward. We've heard about that recently. We've heard we need to keep moving forward and we need to be pressing forward. Sometimes you get to a point where you just lose the motivation to do this. You know what you're supposed to do. We know the right way. We know how we're supposed to live. But we get lazy in pursuing it. We lack motivation. We lack drive to do that. We just become apathetic. We just don't have the energy to do this anymore. Or at least we don't have the energy to do it to the full. And we get a little bit lazy. It's obviously not a good place to be. Israel, when they got into that place, every time when they got into that place, where they got overwhelmed, where they weren't sure, where they just didn't want to give it their all anymore. They made very terrible decisions as a people. You can think about when they went to enter the promised land. They got this bad report and they just, you know, that sounds like a lot. We're not going to do that. And so God said, fine, you're all going to die in the desert. You hit a place like that and it's not where you want to be. And you know that. We know that. But sometimes it's hard to get out of that place. It's hard to overcome apathy. Interestingly, the Bible tells us almost precisely why this happened to them. Turn over to Proverbs 29 and verse 18. Proverbs 29 and verse 18 is probably a familiar one. You've probably heard it before. It says this, where there is no revelation or where there is no vision, the people cast off restraint. Now, it's interesting because cast off restraint there is exactly the same terminology, the same word used in Exodus 32, 25, where it says that Moses came and saw that the people were naked, saw that the people were unrestrained. He comes to this point and he sees them and they are no longer restrained. They're no longer committed to something, bound by something, self-motivated in some direction. Proverbs 29:18 says, this happens when people lose vision. When you have no vision, when you have no revelation, when you have no idea or real clear picture in mind of what it is you're moving toward, then that's it. You cast off restraint and you tend to revert into what you're comfortable with, which is exactly what they did. You don't really know where, you can't see yourself going somewhere. So, you know, I've done this. I've been back here before and that was comfortable. And that's just what I'm going to do. I'm used to that. The Israelites had no vision for their future. They didn't know where they were going. They didn't know if this Moses guy was coming back. They didn't know where they were supposed to go from here. They just said, I don't know. So Aaron, make us a calf. This is what we're used to. And let's go back to Egypt. Let's do that. They got lazy. They didn't care enough about what they had been commanded to do to go ahead and do it. They were, in that sense, apathetic. They just didn't care enough to follow it. The interesting thing is that they probably didn't think that they were even turning away from God. It's possible, based on the wording there, when they demand this idol, they thought they were making an idol that was going to represent God, this God that had been talking to them, even though he had explicitly told them, don't make any idols of silver and gold. Don't do that. Don't go there. They said, well, this is what we're used to. This is what we're comfortable with. Aaron, make this thing for us. And they probably thought that they were worshiping God, but they were doing it in a way that was comfortable to them. That wasn't what God had told them. And we see plenty of that today. There are plenty of obvious examples that we don't need to go into of people who worship God in a way that is comfortable to them because it's comfortable to them. Not because it's what God commands, not because it's what God says, but because that's what I've always done, and God probably respects that. God probably likes that. They just don't care enough to look into what God actually says we should do and do it. They lack the drive and the motivation to do it. Even within our own experience in our own church culture, how many people do you know that just got tired of living this way of life? They just, you know, they just got too worn down in doing this. And, you know, all these things that happen, they're really tough. You know, all these church things that go on and problems here and, you know, problems in a congregation, problems between two people, problems with a whole church. These things are really big and just kind of tough. And I'm just done dealing with that. So I'm just going to duck out and I'm going to go do, I'm going to cling to the bits and pieces that I am comfortable with or that are easy for me. You know, I'll still eat the clean and unclean meats, and I won't work on the Sabbath, and I'll, you know, I'll do the bits and pieces that I'm okay with, but all this other stuff, wow. Being with all of you people is, you know, really hard sometimes. So I'm gonna go keep the Sabbath in my living room. And people tire of this way of life. People get overwhelmed and worn down by it. They cast off restraint, is really what it is. They cast off that restraint. And it's because, as Proverbs tells us, it's because they lose vision. They lose vision of where they're going, of what God has called us to. If you have a vision of exactly what God is calling us to and where we're going, you're not going to isolate yourself from your brothers and sisters. You're not going to observe things that God doesn't want you to observe because you think that, yeah, that's all right. You know, if you understand what God has called us to and why he's called us to it, then there's a certain course of action that you follow and that we are all striving to follow. It's that vision. It's a vision of where we're going and what we're supposed to be someday, what God has intended for us, that fuels that, that motivates us, that really helps us to overcome these dips that we all get into where we just have a hard time caring and praying regularly and studying and doing all the stuff that we know we should do. It gets kind of hard. If it gets hard, it's probably because we've lost sight of something. Israel, when they're sitting at the base of that mountain and they tell Aaron to make this calf, the mountain is still covered in clouds and Moses is still up in the mountain. They've lost sight of that completely. And now they're saying, let's, you know, do this thing over here that we're used to. If we hit those spots, those low spots where we just have a hard time being motivated, we probably have lost sight of where we're going. A little bit of a case study in this. Consider Abraham. You think about how momentous it was for him to pick up from what he was used to and where he was with his family and Ur, and be told, move. Move to this place that you've never been, that you don't know about, that's completely unfamiliar. Pick up your family and move. And he did it. He went and he did it. He had drive. He had obviously a motivation to go do it. Probably wasn't a real grudging, I guess this is what we should do. People that have that kind of attitude are not the kind of people that relocate their whole family a whole, you know, world away. In that era, especially, to, you know, just because they think they heard some voice that said they should move. He had motivation. He had drive. And why? Turn over to Hebrews 11. And there are several layers to the answer to this, I think. Hebrews 11 and verse 8. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive as an inheritance. And when he went out, not knowing where he was going. So you say he went out by faith. He did, absolutely. He went out by faith. But what motivated him? What is faith? Take a look at verse 1. Faith is a substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. So he's hoping for something. He's acting on something. He has a vision of something. It's not this blind faith in this voice that he heard. He had a vision of something specific. He was given a very specific vision. You'll see more evidence of this in verse 6. We're told, without faith it is impossible to please him, for he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. So you have to believe that God is a rewarder. A rewarder implies future. It implies that there is something forward that you are looking to. God doesn't just come to you and say, I want you to blindly believe in me. Turn over to Genesis 12 in verse 1. You'll see this. And it's the same with us. So Abraham had faith. And we know that it's by faith that he acted on what he acted on. But what was he acting on? What was his motivation? What was his drive? Genesis 12 and verse 1. Now the Lord had said to Abram, get out of your country, from your family and from your father's house, to a land that I will show you. And notice, I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse him who curses you. And in you, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. So, he didn't just come to Abraham and say, I want you to move. He said, I want you to move because here's what's going to happen. Here's the vision of your future. Here's what I'm going to do for you. This is my promise to you. This is what you can look toward and count on. You have to have faith in that. You have to have faith that God is. You have to have faith that he is a rewarder, that he follows through on his promises. But he told him, go. I have things in store for you. I have a future for you. I have a vision for you. If you'll follow. If you'll act on it. So he does the same thing for us. He gives us and has given us already vision of a future. He's shown us, look, here's what's out there. This is your motivator. This is the thing that motivates you. It requires that you believe me. It requires that you believe that I can bring this all to pass, that I will bring it all to pass, he tells us. But he sets it out there in front of us to motivate us, to keep us moving forward, to keep us from getting worn down, to keep us from not caring. Vision, then, knowing your future, having a sense of your future, of where you're going, that's a driver, that's a motivator, that's the thing that propels you forward. Okay, you're saying, so what? So keep your eyes on the horizon and go after your dream and keep the vision alive. Those things, maybe that's encouraging, but they don't really tell you how to do that. They don't really tell you what to do. They tell you sort of, or they don't tell you how to do it. They tell you just what. Hey, you should have your eyes on the vision. Okay. All right. But that doesn't really get you past the apathy stage, does it? To have somebody say, hey, you shouldn't be so down. You should think about the future. And so the proverb doesn't end there. Proverbs 29 and verse 18. Where there is no vision or revelation, the people cast off restraint, but happy is he who keeps the law. Proverbs like this contrast two scenarios. They're not disconnected. Happy is he who keeps the law is very much connected to the first part of this proverb. Casting off restraint is in stark contrast to keeping the law. Casting off restraint is what Israel did when they made for themselves a calf and had their big party. They cast off restraint. They took God's laws and they set them aside and they did what they were going to do. So there's a correlation then, when you link these two parts of the verse, there's a correlation between keeping the law and having this vision of the future. One fuels the other. And vice versa. They can fuel each other. If you have a vision of the future, it propels you to keep the law. Interestingly, if you keep God's law, it also gives you a vision of the future. Right? These things help each other. They fuel each other. They drive each other. One obvious example is the Holy Days. We think about especially starting with Pentecost and moving forward, those are very future-oriented holy days. We observe these holy days. They point us toward the future. They remind us annually of this vision that we are supposed to have. They remind us of what God is calling us to, of this first fruits resurrection, and ultimately of the great resurrection that will happen there after the millennium. They focus us forward, right? They give us a sense of what's coming. They really drive that vision for us. But that's not the only way that keeping God's law helps make that vision crystal clear. It really crystallizes it in your mind. I'll give you a physical example, secular example. Have you ever had a major goal, something you really wanted to do in life, some big thing, some big task, right? Maybe it was going to college. There's a lot of preparation that goes into that. Maybe you wanted to climb a mountain. I thought about that when I was young. Maybe you wanted to raise a child. There's all these big things that you can plan to do, right? You can have big plans. And so what do you do when you have the vision of that thing that you want to do, that you want to get done? I'll give you an example, personal example for me. I'm sure you probably have examples that would relate. A few years ago, 6 years ago now, I wanted to start a business, right? So what did I do? I had a really clear idea. Here's what I want to do. I know how to do this really well. I can see this all working out. I can see where this is going and where it's going to be. I've got a sense of this. You know, it's not tangible. It's not something that you have, but you have a real good idea of what it could be like, of where it could go, of what it might be like. So I had motivation to do this and to get there. So what did I do? What were my next steps? I started seeking out the rules for getting started. What does the government require me to do? You know, what does the state require me to do? What sort of forms do I have to fill out? What kind of setup do I have to do? What kind of, you know, hardware do I have to have? Software? I need, you know, what kind of things do you need in order to do this? And you go out and you find mentors. I went out and found people that could teach me how to do various things or give me advice on how to do this and how to run this. How am I going to do this and set this up? Tell me, you know, show me the things that I need. Give me the instruction that I need. I went out and found books and I read books on the topic and thought, all right, this is good information. I need this so that I can get this set up and really have this business going the way that I want it to go. And I continued developing my skills. I thought, oh, if this is gonna work, I'm gonna need to learn how to do some of these things here and learn these things here and brush up on some of this stuff that I used to know. And I'll have to really, you know, I have to hone my skills in these areas and be able to do this. When you have a specific vision, and you've probably had something like that, when you have a specific vision of where you want to be and what you want to do, you act in a very specific way. You restrain yourself to a specific set of practices. If you want to run a business, you don't just wake up in the morning and lounge around and watch TV, you know, and, oh, I guess it's getting to be about noon. Maybe I should fire up the computer. You know, you have a very specific set of things that you're going to do based on the rules that you understand, if we can go that route. As being the rules that are going to make it work. Here are the rules that will work for making a business. Here are the rules that will work for raising a child. Here are the things that you need to do. Here are the laws and the commandments that you need to follow in order to make that vision a reality. And then interestingly, as you start practicing those things, right, you take specific steps and you put them into practice. It gives you a really crystal clear picture of, oh, I see what that will be when I'm doing this well. Another example might be playing an instrument. If you've ever played an instrument, and you've had a vision of sitting at a recital somewhere and being able to perform a piece, and you've sat there and practiced, and you clunk through something, and that's really rough. But you know what it could be like. There's a certain set of rules and commands that you're going to follow. You're going to practice these scales. You're going to do all of the routine and all of the practice that you need to do in order to develop that ability so that you can reach that specific goal. You have a vision of sitting there and playing this piece at this recital, and you're putting certain very specific actions in place so that you can get there, so that you can do that. Hopefully you've got something in mind where you've done something like that physically. You've developed in some way. In our case here today, spiritually, God's laws, they show us the mechanics, the behaviors that will be practiced in His kingdom. So His kingdom looks a certain way. There's a certain set of behaviors and practices that will be practiced by everyone in that kingdom. And if you're going to be a part of that kingdom, then there are very specific things that you put into practice in your life to make sure that you're going to be there. And as you start doing that, as you start putting these specific actions in place and saying, okay, this is what it is to keep the Sabbath holy. This is what it is to love my neighbor. You start to see, okay, this is God's character. This is how it looks. And you get a better and clearer understanding of what God's kingdom is going to be like. And that gives you vision. And that starts to drive you. And it's not just us doing this, right? God gives us His Spirit. He helps us to understand the intent of the mechanics. You can think about the Sermon on the Mount. You know, you've heard it said, don't kill. But look, here's the breakdown. Here's the real intent of that command, right? These are the actions you're going to walk through. You're not going to kill people. Okay? Well, I think we're all doing pretty good at that. But from there, here's why. Okay? So you start understanding there's another depth to this of how I'm supposed to treat people. And as you start treating other people that way, you get clarity and insight into how God acts and who God is. And as you practice, you start to see what it's going to be like to be a part of that kingdom. You practice restraint. You have this certain restraint to this certain set of rules and principles that guide you toward the vision of what you have. So it tells us, happy is he who keeps the law, in stark contrast to having no vision and casting off restraint. Conclusion, we'll look at one more scripture over in Hebrews 12. Jesus Christ was never worn down spiritually. Not the way that we get. There were times, I'm sure, obviously, that it was challenging for him. But he was never worn down. He never fell into apathy. He never just didn't care enough to do the things that he needed to do. And it tells us that he was motivated by a vision of the future, just as we should be. He was motivated looking towards something. Hebrews 12 and verse 1 says, therefore we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who, and note this, for the joy that was set before him, there was something set before him, and he could have a vision of this. And this is what was driving him. This is what compelled him, right? For the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. So he has a vision, and his vision includes us. He wants us as part of that future. He wants us to have that same vision, to be a part of that family. So let's fuel that vision. Let's fuel it in our own minds by practicing his laws.